It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Just over a week ago, many of the pundits declared that this candidacy was dead. Now we're very much alive. We're going to bring this nation together. We're regenerating a Democratic base. It's more than a comeback, in my view, our campaign. It's a comeback for the soul of this nation. And there's a place in our campaign for each of you. And I want to thank Bernie Sanders and his supporters for their tireless energy and their passion. We share a common goal, and together, we'll defeat Donald Trump. We'll defeat him together.
That was Joe Biden and his victory speech last night because he carried 4 out of 6 of the states. Sandy Rios with you. I'll give you kind of a rundown in case you have not seen this. Joe Biden won Michigan, Missouri, Mississippi, and Idaho. And Sanders, at least at the time that I went on the air, there was some precincts and areas yet to be counted, but Washington State was still carried by Sanders just in a squeak, really. It was 32.75% to Biden's 32.54%, so it could have even switched by the time since I last looked at this. But also Sanders, at the time I looked at this, was ahead in North Dakota, 48.5% to 42.4%. So two states, North Dakota and Washington State at that point, for Sanders, very close, and Michigan, Missouri, Mississippi, and Idaho for Joe Biden. And Joe Biden won handily. In Michigan, the vote was 52, almost 53% for Biden against 36.5% for Sanders. In Missouri, Biden won 60.1% of the vote and Sanders 34.56%. And in Mississippi, it was a slam dunk for Biden at 81%, Sanders at 15%. And so, oh, and then Idaho. Let's just say that Biden at this point was ahead by 4 points, so likely to pull that out too. I think it's been certainly handed to him. So that's kind of the results of last night's presidential primary. You know, Sanders was kind of banking on Michigan, hoping that he could pull that out. It had the largest number of delegates for last night. It was 125, but he didn't do very well. And there's kind of an analysis on how those voters turned out in Michigan, and I wanted to read it to you because I thought it was a really good analysis of how those votes were chosen. It comes from Fox, and it's from Andrew Schwartz. And in the analysis of who voted, Vice President Biden continued to be strong with seniors, black voters, political moderates. He did really well among late deciding voters, and 25% of the voters in the states last night were late deciders. And he carried 40% of those late deciders. Now, Sanders, on the other hand, did very well, of course, with young, very liberal voters and older liberal voters. In Michigan, to be specific, Bernie Sanders won just 13% of seniors. And more than twice as many seniors turned out as young voters in Michigan, which is what he was hoping to get. Sanders was also able to win very liberal Michiganders by 28 points. Biden won among women by 28 points, black voters 36 points, and moderates 48 points. In Missouri, interestingly, nearly half of Missouri Democratic primary voters said that health care was the top issue facing the country, and that's a record high for any of the polls in this primary season. Nearly 7 in 10 Missouri voters favored a Sanders-style single-payer health care system, second only to Iowa. But they ended up voting for Biden. That was what was interesting. Of course, Joe Biden is for single-payer. Of course he is. He was so thrilled about Obamacare, which is the pathway to single payer. That's where all these roads go, regardless of the nuances and the differences that the candidates say that they have. That is what they want. They want the federal government to be in charge of health care. Because that's about power. I'm telling you, there's no more personal way for a government to control your life than to control your health care. And the left knows this. That's why they're so intent on it. It's not like they have warm, fuzzy feelings and want to make sure that you get better health care. Maybe some liberals do. They genuinely want to see people, everyone taken care of in the same way. That's their ideal. Of course, that's never possible. That's never possible. We're not all the same, not in the same status. We don't all make the same money. We don't have the same resources, and we will never all be the same. And even in totalitarian countries where socialism is embraced, like Russia, it's never equal. The Communist Party officials or the elites always get more and better. It's just the nature of man. I think only in heaven are things going to be the same. And even then, it doesn't sound like it's going to be the same. There'll be various rewards, various positions in heaven. So I guess sort of, you know, get used to it. We are equal, certainly in terms of the kingdom in God's sight, but we're not all the same. And that's what the left always wants. They say they do. They don't want to be the same. They don't want to be the same. They want to be the ones in control, but in their utopian model, they want everyone to have the same of everything, which means not very good of anything. So Mississippi was, of course, not competitive because Mississippi voters are more conservative by and large. They have the highest share of black voters and one of the lowest shares of voters under the age of 30 in a primary thus far. Biden won in almost every demographic in Mississippi, which would explain why he got 80% of the vote in Mississippi, 81%. Yeah. So not much to say about Mississippi beyond that. But anyway, that's kind of the breakdown. And in those various states, let's see, Elizabeth Warren did pretty well still in Washington State. I was going to tell you those. Let's see. Here it is. Elizabeth Warren pulled almost 3% in Idaho, but in Washington State, she pulled 12.5%. So, and Michael Bloomberg pulled 11%. So there are still, you know, those are pretty, I think, significant percentages that could sway voters. It'll be interesting to see how the remaining voters, the fans of these other candidates, come down. Whether they will swing their support behind Joe Biden, we know that the candidates have certainly done that. We had a miraculous decision for all of those candidates to come out in support of Joe Biden. Remember, right before the primary, it was Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, Beto O'Rourke, Michael Bloomberg, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris. They suddenly all saw the light and thought Joe was the candidate. But Bernie Sanders supporters are a little different, and I think Bernie did not give a speech last night. He decided not to say anything. So someone took their microphone and interviewed some Bernie supporters and media and just regular supporters and did this montage, and it'll give you kind of some insight into how they're feeling about things, how they were last night. Clip 11.
Undoubtedly a sense of disappointment. You can hear it. Some people talking about the corruption of the Democratic Party, what they see as the establishment getting behind Joe Biden.
Really, the question has to be asked again of Vice President Biden, of Hillary Clinton. The signal that they sent out, what they said was, essentially, was, you know, we might just have to stay with Trump because we may not be voting for Bernie.
I think this is a very dangerous moment. The Democratic Party. You have now an insurgency that's about to be defeated. They thought that they were going to be able to surround a divided establishment with their movement, crush that divided establishment, and move forward. Instead, the establishment united and stopped them.
All right, so that's the thoughts of some pundits about the Bernie Sanders supporters. My gut feeling is that because they're young and very liberal and enthused, you know, by hearing Bernie speak, I just don't think they'll come out and support Joe Biden. I'd be surprised. You know, it's like, I just a question if they're motivated to what they think will be a takedown of Donald Trump. I think it was voting for Bernie that was motivating, not them. And I think with him, if he steps out, and who knows what he's going to do. Of course, the race is not over, but he seems to not have the same spring in his step, and it'll be interesting to see if he stays in the race. I thought it was really interesting. James Clyburn, of course, is really, if anyone, single-handedly responsible for this turnaround for Joe Biden. It's James Clyburn from South Carolina the night before Super Tuesday. well, the day before and the days before, where he whipped up the black vote in South Carolina for Joe Biden, and that was the game changer. So interesting to hear him say this last night. Let's listen.
I think when the night is over, Joe Biden will be the prohibitive favorite to win the Democratic nomination. And quite frankly, if the night ends the way it has begun, I think it is time for us to shut this primary down. It's time for us to cancel the rest of these debates, because you don't do anything but get yourself in trouble if you continue this contest when it's obvious that the numbers will not shake out for you.
Okay, so that sounds, well, that makes sense, doesn't it? To just stop the primary, stop these debates, because, you know, it's what's the point? Joe Biden's going to win, and so why would we do this and go through all this trouble? That makes sense, right? But it also especially makes sense when you know that James Clyburn knows that Joe Biden's having a lot of trouble putting his words together. He's having a lot of trouble making sense. He's also stepping into it with some very serious situations. Yesterday, he was at an auto plant that's under construction, and he got into an argument. I'm sure you've seen the clip by now, but if you haven't, you should hear it. He got into a clip with a guy in a hard hat, one of the workers, and there are a couple of tapes of this that people made, but basically the worker was challenging Joe Biden on his position on gun rights. And it sounded like this. Some of it is edited because of Biden's language. So this is clip 12. Let's listen.
You are actively trying to diminish your Second Amendment right to take away your gun.
You're
full
of right.
Now, gotta shush. I support the Second Amendment. Second Amendment, just like right now, if you yell fire, that's not free speech. But from the very beginning, I have a shotgun. I have a 20 gauge, a 12 gauge. My son's hunt. Guess what? You're not allowed to own any weapon. I'm not taking your gun away at all. You need 100 rounds?
So when you were in Vado, no. And you said you were going to take our guns back.
I did not say that. That's not true. I did not say that.
It's a viral video.
It's a viral video like the other ones they're putting out that are saying they're lying.
Your whole voice, you said that you're taking the gun.
Well, he disqualified it.
Wait. Take your AR-14s and whatever.
Okay, this is not okay.
Hold on.
All right, so you probably caught a lot of that. Joe Biden was really in his face. He put his finger in his face. The worker did not like that. Joe told him he was full of blank. He also called him I can't say that word either. It's a part of an animal's body. And so they really got into it, and somebody tried to stop Joe, and he says, shush. You can hear him saying shush. It was not cool. It really wasn't. I think we can talk a lot about his misspeaking, but also just his interaction with that worker. He should have reasoned with him. Instead, he just got mad, and of course, he misspoke about the AR-14, which is really an AR-15. He also misspoke about his own record, because the auto worker is saying to him, look, you're on tape saying you're going to take away some of our guns. And Joe Biden says, that's not true. You know, that's one of those videos, like they are basically saying, these are the videos they're showing that are not really true. I didn't say that. But when we come back, I'm going to play for you the clip where Joe Biden said basically what the worker's saying that he said, and also his embrace of Beto O'Rourke and the Beto O'Rourke statement on guns. So I think it's an important point to make. It's certainly beyond his inability to sort of remember and put things together and remembering where he is, which is very sad to watch. But this is really goes to the heart of policy, and I think we need to be clear about it. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The AFA, Marriage, Family, and Life Conference is coming June 25th through the 27th.
experts have lined up to help Christians make a difference in our increasingly wicked culture. Dr. Frank Turek.
If there is a God and Jesus rose from the dead, then the God who created the universe out of nothing is Jesus.
John Uhler.
One of the hidden things that few women will talk about is the long-term effects of having had an abortion.
Abraham Hamilton III.
I'm certainly happy that they didn't seek to regulate slavery. Can you imagine, Frederick Douglass? We need to make sure that the chains you put on the slave's neck are not too tight. We're regulating murder. We know it's murder. They know it's murder. We all know it's murder. But we just won't call it that in public. No, it's a woman's right to choose.
The Marriage, Family, and Life Conference at Hope Church in Tupelo, June 25th through the 27th, includes a children's track as well. Learn more and register at marriagefamilylife.net.
8 Days of Hope continues to be the hands and feet of Jesus. The ministry is in need of volunteers as they turn their attention to Nashville. Visit 8daysofhope.com to learn how you can help. Here's 8 Days of Hope President Steve Tiber.
We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. On a moment's notice, your life can change, and you don't know what to do, and all of a sudden you get a knock on your door, and there's a dozen volunteers that have come from all over the country, and homeowners usually, they just start to weep. They're so blown away that volunteers they don't even know would come to their house to help them. That's the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
Volunteers must be 18 years or older. Food and lodging are provided. Be a part of helping tornado victims in Nashville. Learn more or sign up at 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
As coronavirus hysteria sweeps across the fruited plain, the Democrats are trying to score some cheap political points. The latest victim, Congressman Paul Gosar, a member of the House Freedom Caucus, accused of being a xenophobic racist after he called the coronavirus the Wuhan virus. It doesn't seem to matter. The Democrats were among the first to point out the virus originated in China's Wuhan province.
But maybe we ought to change the names of Ebola. You know, that's named after a river in the Congo. These people are on a nuance that, you know, all they can say is something bad. They hate conservatives. They hate Donald Trump. And they will go to any lengths to cause a stir.
Congressman Gosar, by the way, is self-quarantined after he came into contact with the person who has the virus. So maybe instead of making unfair accusations, the Democrats could practice some self-restraint. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Lieutenant, getting the union vote when there's a large portion of the union workers that are gun enthusiasts and you are actively trying to diminish our Second Amendment right and take away our guns.
You're full of shit.
All right, thank you.
Now, shush. Shush. I support the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment, just like right now, if you yell fire, that's not free speech. And from the very beginning, I have a shotgun, I have a 20 gauge, a 12 gauge, my sons hunt. Guess what? You're not allowed to own any weapon. I'm not taking your gun away at all. You need 100 rounds.
So when you were in Beto, no, when you said you're going to take our guns,
I did not say that. That's not true. I did
it's
not say that.
It's a viral video.
It's a viral video like the other ones they're putting out that are simply a lie.
Your voice, you said that you're taking the guns.
Well, he just clarified it.
Wait. Take your AR-14s.
Okay, this is not okay.
Hold on.
All right.
Hey, let's go.
He was talking, but the worker said, this is not okay. He's talking about Biden's finger in his face. Isn't that an interesting exchange? That was Joe Biden in a brand new, being built, in process auto plant with auto workers with hard hats on. And he got into it with that auto worker. He's asking him, you want to take our Second Amendment rights? And that's what he's charging. It's a union member. And then, of course, Biden says, no, you're full of you-know-what. No, I don't mean you heard the rest of it. So no wonder James Clyburn is asking for there to be no more debates or public, you know, no more debates and no more primaries. What's the point, he's saying? Because he's afraid, I think, of what Joe Biden might say. And, well, he should be. So let's talk about, he said, that's not true. I don't want to take away your guns, but let's get a little background here. And I know that I'm assuming that the auto worker in that clip was referring to an appearance of Joe Biden on CNN, I'm not sure, sometime in the last few months. And this is the exchange. Let's listen.
I'll make something clear. I'm going to guarantee this is not the last year seeing this guy. You're going to take care of the gun problem with me. You're going to be the one who leads this effort. I'm counting on you. I'm counting on you. We need you badly. The state needs you. The country needs you. You're the best. Thank you.
All right. That was actually not the clip, but it's my fault. I called for the wrong clip. But that is Joe Biden saying that he wanted Beto O'Rourke to be in charge of his gun policy. Now, that's ironic because you will recall that Beto O'Rourke, before he dropped out of the race, got bolder and bolder. Some might say wilder and wilder about his position on gun restrictions. He started advocating for gun confiscation and a mandatory buyback scheme. And so, and I know Joe Biden knows that. Beto O'Rourke is really bad on guns. That's, I think, one of the reasons he finally just fell off the cliff when it came to his candidacy. But Joe Biden turns around and says, you're the one I want to be in charge of my gun policy. But Joe Biden was on CNN, and this is clip 14.
Buy an assault weapon that has multiple rounds, or buy an assault weapon that has 100 rounds. Even though it may not, you can't point to the fact that it, in fact, had stopped it before. Do you want more of them on the street? Do we want to do that?
So to gun owners out there who say, well, a Biden administration means they're going to come for my guns.
Bingo. You're right if you have an assault weapon. The fact of the matter is they should be illegal, period. Look, the Second Amendment doesn't say you can't restrict the kinds of weapons people can own.
So the problem is for gun owners, and we won't get off on that. We'll have John Lott back on and we'll talk about it again. But the definition of assault weapons, you know, that word sounds horrible, but a lot of hunters use what are categorized as assault weapons. And they're really not. They're used for legal means to kill game. So that is the very dangerous territory that Joe Biden is treading on. And if he's going to turn it over to Beto O'Rourke, it's even more dangerous territory. I also want to mention that there is a lot of talk now about what Joe Biden is going to do with his cabinet, and there are a lot of concerns about that. Some are speculating. I think Axios wrote about this. Not only are there discussions of people who've dropped out, certainly the role of vice president is being, they're talking about Amy Klobuchar or the black candidate from California. They're talking about, and they're also saying that James Clyburn is the one who's going to have to make the final choice on that. So we will see, you know, he'll probably choose from, and maybe that's the reason they dropped out, and that's why President Trump was calling it a quid pro quo when all these candidates dropped out and suddenly supported him. Other names being floated for his cabinet are Susan Rice. Remember, Susan is the one who went on the networks and lied about what happened in Benghazi, blamed it on a video. The reason she wasn't ever nominated for a Secretary of State by President Obama was because they were afraid she couldn't get through the confirmation process because everyone knew how she had lied. It was just there for everyone to see. But it looks like she, you know, maybe rolled out again under a Joe Biden presidency. Michael Bloomberg, surprise, surprise. John Kerry, the person that just never will disappear, the one who's been negotiating with the Iranians behind President Trump's back. John Kerry has personal friendships and family members. As I recall, I shouldn't say family members. His son, as I recall, is a really good friend to an Iranian, well-born Iranian, and they are tied together. He and his wife are good friends with Iranians, and so I'm sure he has great plans for our policies with Iran. And so there are reports about Joe Biden's cabinet choices already. So then, of course, there's the issue of abortion, which is ever before us, and we don't know what's going to happen with it. We know that there was a Supreme Court case last week, and we talked about it, where it had to do with abortion clinic doctors, abortionists, needing to have access to medical to hospitals in order to send their patients if something went wrong in an abortion. And that's the big discussion. That was the big debate in the Supreme Court just last week. Well, you may remember that there was a rally in front of the Supreme Court, and you may remember that the host of that rally sounded like this, clip 19.
Let's do this! Thank you to all of the members of the faith community for opening up this rally. Who's ready to rally for abortion access? Yes! So, my name is Renee Bracey Sherman, and I have an abortion!
All right, that's enough. But that's that was the host of the event. And, of course, at that event also speaking was, guess who, Chuck Schumer. And you know about this. Remember, he got up on, in front of that crowd, that the same microphone you just heard the demon-like screaming. That's my editorial remark on that. He says, I want to tell you, Gorsuch. I want to tell you, Kavanaugh. You have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions. Well, you know there was quite a dust-up, and people were pretty appalled that the minority leader of the Senate would actually threaten two justices of the Supreme Court by name, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, nominees by President Trump. Just amazing that he would do that. There's been quite a bit of dust-up, and I just want to point out to you that Josh Hawley is one of 14 senators who are calling for Schumer to be censured. Yeah, started to say punished, and I was reading censured in the House, in the Senate. And so we are, as an organization, American Family Association, are encouraging you to weigh in on this. AFA Action, actually, it's our sister organization. We are urging you to tell your senators to vote yes on censure for Chuck Schumer over his threats to these justices. It just can't be allowed. It cannot be allowed. Can you imagine the crazy people hearing that and the danger that Chuck Schumer is putting Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh in over remarks like that? It really is unconscionable. And so if you'd like to join us in notifying your senator or asking them politely to vote for censure of Chuck Schumer, you can do that by going to AFAAction.net, AFAAction.net. And by the way, you might want to sign up for our action alerts, because really these are the ways that you can be more connected. It's quicker than me telling you on the radio and has more explanation on it. Basically, we're saying urge your senators to censure Chuck Schumer. So go to AFAAction.net. And we're not the only ones encouraging that by a long shot. There's a whole group of black pastors who are asking for that. They say things like this. These remarks made during a rally at the Supreme Court on a pending case were clearly intended to influence the decision on that case. This is a petition from the Coalition of African American Pastors. This behavior is an affront to the dignity of the U.S. Senate. It perpetuates a sense of division in our nation and encourages radicals to approach political disagreements as a forum for violent action. And I might also add an interesting, I was reading how the hearings in that case went. And guess who dominated the discussion? It was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has been a rabid pro-death abortion person since she was an attorney with the ACLU. She was a radical abortionist when, I don't mean performing abortions, but pro-abortion person, jurist, judge, attorney, for her entire adult life. She is rabidly in favor. She speaks about it all the time. Whereas these pro-life justices are not allowed to have an opinion. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has an opinion as big as Texas and spreading like Houston. She took up an hour of the debate with her own questions. So we have this Supreme Court justice who's all about abortion. That's fine for her. But Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, John Roberts maybe, are pro-life, and they mustn't dare say anything. So it's really amazing, the double standard in that particular case. I also wanted to mention something to you that happened last week. We talked about all these elections and how important they are. Rashida Tlaib had her chance to weigh in on abortion last week, or maybe it was Monday, and I wanted to play this for you, and we didn't, so let's hear it today. Rashida Tlaib, the congresswoman from Michigan.
This past year, I realized, my, are they obsessed with our bodies, how we talk, how we look, what we stand for? I mean, this type of policing of our bodies is so intricate. connected to all the social justice movements all around the country. I represent the third poorest congressional district in the country. This issue is an economic justice issue. This issue is a racial justice issue. And let me tell you, this obsession with our bodies. You know, I in the legislature, in the Michigan legislature for 6 years, used to say to people, yo, you know what? You're so freaking obsessed with what I decide to do with my body. Maybe you shouldn't even want to have sex with me or with you or with any woman.
You know what? That's enough. That's enough. She goes on and gets more graphic. It's not worth hearing. But that's your Congresswoman, Rashida Tlaib from Michigan. This is why elections matter. And this is why I'm, you know, on you about voting in these primaries as much as I am. Meanwhile, in Minnesota, the other member of the Gang of Six, Ilhan Omar, had something to say about all this, too. She tweeted, two accused sexual predators should not be deciding whether or not women have access to health care in this country. And she's talking about Justice Brett Kavanaugh and Clarence Thomas, calling them accused sexual predators. So she also says that abortion is a constitutional right because, of course, she would know. She's so familiar with our Constitution, Ilhan Omar. Meanwhile, I guess she's perfectly in sync with the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Fry, who proclaimed March 10th Abortion Provider Appreciation Day. So the battle lines are being drawn. There's no question about it. And it is Chuck Schumer's right about the battle. For those that oppose abortion, for those that stand up for what's right, in any case, right and wrong, there's going to be tremendous opposition. You know, I'm going to be doing an interview on Friday, sort of a survey of women at these rallies who were interviewed who are strong supporters of Trump and why they support him. And one of the findings in, I'll tell you right now, one of the findings in this survey is probably, it's an interview process. It's a sort of it's research. It's more than a survey. It's research. One of the things that the women said was, they had felt isolated. Many of them were pro-life. They were pro-family. They were conservative women. They felt ostracized and like they were alone in this culture. And they have felt that President Trump has given, by his own personal example, them the courage to speak out and stand up and fight back. And I just think it was a pretty interesting finding, and I think you'll find that interview really interesting. By the way, speaking on abortion again, West Virginia, by contrast, the governor there, Governor Jim Justice, just signed a House Bill 4007, which is called the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. He signed the bill on Monday. It will require abortionists and doctors to provide medical care for babies who survive an abortion. You'll remember this. Ironically, and I can't go on. I don't want to go into all this because it always sounds so self-serving. But honestly, this whole Born Alive story broke on my radio show when I was in Chicago a number of years ago when Jill Stanek was a very shy nurse who was in a whole lot of – she was in a very awful position. She was seeing babies born alive, placed in closets, allowed to die. And yet she was a nurse in good standing at the hospital, and it was a fearful thing to step out and speak out. She did her first interview at the urging of her pastor, who contacted me on my show, and gradually she became bolder and bolder, and pretty soon she became a powerhouse, and she still is, Jill Stanek. And that's how this whole Born Alive protection started. We discovered that hospitals around the country were allowing babies who were, a lot of times it was botched abortions, so the baby would be still alive and not injured, and the baby would be there in front of them still. What do they do with this baby? They were supposed to have aborted. So they would just put it in a closet and let it just cry itself to death. It was a horrible situation, and the hospitals around the country were doing that. So now West Virginia has just signed a law preventing that, and Governor Jim Justice just signed it on Monday. God bless Jim Justice for that, and for all of you who stand and fight and have found your courage, man, I'm grateful. All right, so stay tuned. We've got more to talk about. I guess we're going to have to talk about the coronavirus again. I guess we are. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios and the Morning on AFR Talk.
What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to the World Health Organization, abortion was the leading cause of death worldwide in 2018. As of December 31st, 2018, 41.9 million babies were murdered in the womb. That's more than the 8.2 million people who died from cancer, more than the 5 million who died from smoking, and more than the 1.7 million who died from HIV/AIDS in 2018 globally combined. Thomas Jefferson once said, "I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. Lord, please strengthen us to abolish this wickedness."
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
And the Bible says we're not supposed to rejoice at the downfall of people, even when they're wicked.
Bishop E.W. Jackson.
I don't a bit more want anything bad to happen to them than the man in the moon. I really don't.
The Awakening.
I believe God is the one who steps in the midst of problems that are simply in the world and affect us all, steps in and brings grace and peace and healing and joy in the midst of very difficult and trying times.
The Awakening, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Bible says God made mankind male and female, two but only two sexes, nothing in between, nothing on either side. And science agrees. Two prominent biologists from Penn State and the University of Manchester in England write in the Wall Street Journal, quote, "Biologists and medical professionals need to stand up for the empirical reality of biological sex because the denial of biological sex is at odds with the scientific understanding of human sexuality. No third type of sex cells exists in humans, they say, and therefore there is no sex spectrum or additional sexes beyond male and female. Sex is binary," end quote. Says another biologist, "A male on the day of his conception will remain a male on the day of his death. The Bible told us that 3,500 years ago. Ladies and gentlemen, do not doubt this book."
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, the UN Security Council endorsed the U.S. deal with the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, a.k.a. the Taliban. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani decided to begin releasing Taliban prisoners. What could possibly go wrong? The answer is plenty. Our preoccupation with the Wuhan flu may obscure another danger, namely that the agreement regarding Afghanistan's future will unleash a renewed outbreak of another virulent pandemic, Sharia supremacism. A troubling comparison by Stephen Young of the Afghan deal with the one that sealed the fate of South Vietnam suggests the Taliban could well use it to retake all of Afghanistan, encouraging jihadists the world over to believe that they too can defeat the United States. We need an insurance policy with volunteer veterans helping the Afghan military and a proven counterinsurgency program that would enable Afghans to defend themselves and their villages against a resurgent Taliban. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
New Rochelle, just outside New York City in Westchester County, facing severe restrictions within a mile radius. Governor Cuomo calling it a matter of life and death.
This is unique in the United States of America. We haven't seen this anywhere else. New Rochelle at this point is probably the largest cluster in the United States of these cases.
108 cases in Westchester County. The National Guard there is going to clean public spaces, even deliver food to homes under quarantine. In Washington State, the governor there expected today to restrict gatherings of more than 250 people in three counties, including King County, where at least 19 people connected to a nursing home have died. And take a look. California, where TSA just announced that three of its officers who work at San Jose International Airport have tested positive for COVID-19. 30 people have died from the virus so far, with more than 1,000 cases nationwide. Overnight, planes of quarantined passengers from the Grand Princess cruise ship landing at military bases in Texas, Georgia, and California, where they will live for the next 2 weeks. Several other planes filled with more passengers are expected to arrive later today.
All right, so that's Todd Pirro, Fox News this morning. That's the latest. Sandy Rios back with you. You know, I've made it pretty well known how I feel about this. You can't go on feelings, but I just think it's overblown. I just really do. And I'm not going to repeat all of that I said yesterday about that, but you see what's happening now. Of course, they're shutting down events left and right. St. Patrick's Day parades are shut down. That big festival in Austin has closed. The debate on Sunday night between the Democratic candidates is not going to allow an audience. A lot of sporting events are closing. So you know the drill. So in Washington, some of the Congress people are quarantining themselves. House Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler, by the way, in a private meeting with Democrats, said that he thinks they should leave. The Congress should leave and go back to their homes. Nancy Pelosi argued with him and said, "We are the captains of the ship. We are the last to leave." Well, God bless her for that. That's pretty noble. Good for her for saying that. But it also might mean that she agrees with me that it's not a very big deal. No, I don't mean that. I don't mean that. What I mean to say, what I really want to be clear about, I think it's a big deal when you get sick. I think it's a big deal that people are dying. It's not that. It's just that I think it's being way exploited and used. And I'll give you an example. I told you yesterday how the left is using this and how thrilled they are that they are trying to tank the stock market, the global market, the oil prices, that whole war between Saudi Arabia and Russia came about because of the coronavirus, because of the lack of demand for flights, you know, the airline industry, the cruise industry. Look, if you were to track every person who has the garden variety flu, and every person they came into contact with, and every person that got it, and every person that sneezed and coughed and, you know, had chills, and every older person who died from it, yes, you would find that the numbers are much greater. And that's my point. We could talk about the common cold and how you could make it sound like it's the most frightening thing in the world, because people are coughing and sneezing on each other and catching the virus and sharing with their neighbors and their children. And people, even elderly people, cannot be exposed if they've got an illness. If you're a cancer patient and you're going through some, you know, heavy-duty chemo and radiation, you can't be exposed to germs like that. It's just, it's a fact that's universal. And I don't see the numbers on this virus being warranting the panic that's causing such consternation, worry, and also real consequences in this culture and in this environment. So the Democrats found another way to enjoy it, and they found another thing that they might get out of this. And I thought, I'll just let you listen, and then we'll talk about it just for a second. This is clip one.
As the coronavirus is rapidly spreading across the U.S., Trump Republicans are trying to dismantle Obamacare in court and leave 20 million people uninsured. Perfect.
Well, this is a case for universal health care.
If there's coronavirus, universal health care would solve a lot of it.
This is an opportunity for us to come to grips with the fact that we absolutely have to transform our health care system.
What do you say to people who are asked to
self-quarantine? I'm sure some of them don't.
Who don't have paid sick leave and, frankly, cannot afford to stay home for those 2 weeks without a paycheck and might be worried about losing their jobs?
I think the government should step in. That would be the most logical choice.
For 40 years, we have been shredding the social safety net. That's a debate we should be having.
Ideally, what we have is a person who believes in universal health care and paid sick leave.
If we were living in the system we want to live in, that I want to see, of course everybody would have paid medical leave.
You know, at a bare minimum, we need federal paid sick leave.
This is why we will perhaps, hopefully not, have more people infected, because more people will go to work.
Right, because they can't afford not.
Because they can't afford,
so
they got to pay the rent.
So what we should be talking about right now are things like paid sick leave.
What they do need is paid sick leave.
We don't have paid sick leave in this country.
The rest of the developed world has universal health care and paid sick leave. We don't have that.
So expanding health care in a crisis like this, not just the humane and right thing to do, but it becomes a question of national security.
All right. So now let's see. The coronavirus is the reason why Trump, he does not care about people, his supporters, because he wants to go on with these rallies. If he cared about them, he would not have his rallies anymore. That's very selfish. That was the point yesterday. And of course, now the coronavirus is the reason why we need universal single payer health care. This is why the government should control health care. And now why we need, paid sick leave so that the government can pay you to stay home. You know, I'm telling you, I lived in Washington long enough to know that, you know, if you just, any excuse to stay home is the excuse they take. Federal workers are some of the worst. And I think you'll find that government workers are pretty bad about it because they have great benefits and they kind of take that for granted. And so they're eager to stay home and be paid. And wouldn't you also? How about let's just not do anything and get paid anyway? So it's a great opportunity, and they don't want to waste a good crisis. Rahm Emanuel quite made that pretty clear yesterday. We played the clip for you. Well, there's an alternative view. And so because I don't express it, because I just it just annoys me. This really does annoy me. I've lived through this too much where they have used these kinds of medical situations, whether it's the bird flu or H1N1, whatever it is, the swine flu, it's always here. It's always an election year, and they always put people in a frenzy. They repeat the pattern every time. That's why I'm a skeptic. It doesn't mean people are not getting coronavirus. Doesn't mean people are not dying from it. Doesn't mean that's not tragic, but it just means it's out of proportion the way it's being reported. Well, Morning Joe on MSNBC disagrees with me, so I'm going to let you hear what he has to say. It's actually quite a long clip. Because you should hear the other side. Here it is, clip 5.
There were a lot of people a week or two ago that were mocking this public health epidemic, this possible pandemic. I think CNN's already calling it a pandemic. They're certainly calling it a pandemic in Italy, where the entire country is being shut down now. But I'm hopeful that other people a week from now will do the same. There are some Fox News people, hosts who are aggressively saying, you may not like the media, maybe you think the media is blowing it up too much, but there are Fox News hosts who are saying you have to take this seriously. I'm hoping all Fox News hosts, I'm hoping all pro-Trump hosts on radio will start doing the same thing, because, you know, for a lot of these talk radio audiences, their average listener is 62, 63, 65 years old. And those are the very people who need to be told what the safety precautions are. I'm thinking about how the CDC, the reports yesterday are that the CDC actually tried to get Donald Trump to ask senior citizens not to fly on airplanes because it would be dangerous for them. And the Trump White House actually ripped that part of the warning out because they didn't want to hurt the bottom line of airlines. They thought that it might hurt airlines financially. So they ignored an important bit of health advice from the CDC.
All right. So that's the first part of it. So Morning Joe wants me to stop telling you that I think it's overblown because he has special insight into this and he thinks, you know, as Tucker does on Fox. Tucker did a good job of claiming that the world was falling and the sky was falling. So he agrees with Morning Joe. Morning Joe and his guest went on to say this. Let's listen.
I'm hoping that this White House and that people who like Donald Trump and people on talk radio will start acting as responsible as some other hosts are starting to act now. Because, again, I'll just keep saying it again and again since they won't.
Science.
Senior citizens, as Dr. Fauci said, don't need to go on cruise lines. Right now, if you believe the Center for Disease Control, they don't need to go on airplanes. Donald Trump doesn't want you to know that, but the CDC does. They want you to be protected. And we need a lot more responsibility like that. Willie, some hosts last night were just saying that this was a plot to take down Donald Trump. That is so dangerous, especially for our seniors.
Yeah, that's what happens when you see literally everything through the lens of Donald Trump. And when you view it as your job, as many of his supporters do, to defend Donald Trump. If everything is a conspiracy, then everything has to be defended against, except this isn't a conspiracy. It's a virus that's traveling across the world. It was interesting, Joe. There are some cracks forming over at Fox News. There were some very prominent hosts last night who took a turn and looked into the camera and said to their viewers, this thing is serious. Let's start taking it that way.
Now, the problem with that logic is that, I'll speak for myself, I've been around for a long time before I ever knew anything about Donald Trump, and I've watched all of these diseases paraded before us, and I've watched them whip us into a frenzy. I talked to you about CNN as especially bad. CNN International is the worst. It is horrendous what they do to scare people. And I think about Y2K, and that's not a disease, but remember how we got whipped up that the time changed to the year 2000, the world was going to end. I'm not exaggerating. Some people thought that. It was going to mess all the clocks up. All of our computers were going to go crazy. People started storing food, and it became a cottage industry. And guess who was a skeptic? Yeah, it was me, and I didn't know anything about Donald Trump then. I just see the hand of all of this. It's always the same. It doesn't mean that you need to be careless about where you go. Maybe you don't certainly want to fly to China right now. Or maybe it's the safest place right now. I don't know. Who knows? But, you know, you can get a disease wherever you go. Your grandchildren, don't go see them because they're little incubators of germs. So I'm just saying. And by the way, just for the record, more than 70% of those with coronavirus in China have recovered and they've been discharged. More than 70%. You know, I don't know about the other 30%. We know that the death rate is somewhere around, and I'm hearing conflicting things about this, but 2 or 3%. It's nowhere near what it is for. The death rate is just not what it is for flu. It's nowhere near. We have, 1,000 cases in this country of 300 million people and 30 deaths? That's really, compare that to other diseases, other communicable diseases, and I think you'll see really the absurdity of what's being claimed. I just know how people in D.C. think. I'm talking about bureaucrats. They are quick to, they have to cover themselves for one thing. Look at all these, like if we have a shooting or if we have some kind of a problem or a tornado or someplace, you know, it's like a drill. So we have like 50 people stand up and talk about what they're doing. And they're basically, you know, I'm the mayor and we're doing, I'm not saying it isn't necessary, but what they're doing is covering themselves for liability, for political purposes. It's become some kind of a big cottage industry to love disasters. And that's what I see in this. And I just say, keep your mind level. See things clearly. Take necessary precautions. Make good decisions yourself. Don't depend on the government to do that for you. And this is interesting. Gavin Newsom is the governor in California. He was someone in a press conference yesterday was trying, you know, he's no fan of President Trump. He's a very much a leftist in his governing. But it was very surprising what he said yesterday. Let's listen to, now we're not going to have time. I talked through the break. Gavin Newsom basically said he was challenged about what President Trump had done for California. And he said, listen, he's done a great job. And so has Vice President Pence. They have responded to every need we've asked. We've had great conversations. I will not criticize what President Trump and his administration has done on coronavirus. Really stunning when you think that he's the governor of California, no fan of President Trump. So we're going to have to be discerning. And it's hard to do that, isn't it, sometimes? So be careful, but be careful in your mind, too, not to get some people, you know, get worried. Some people are more given. They feel more vulnerable. So we don't want them in a panic. Be careful, but not in a panic. All right. Well, this is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.